Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Everything gonna be all right this morning.
It's This Week in Chicago History with Anna DeVlantis, and we are remembering Muddy Waters. Anna, good morning.
Yeah. Good morning, Bob. This week in 1983, Chicago lost one of the city's greatest artists of all time, one of the country's greatest artists, too, I think it's fair to say, Muddy Waters, the granddaddy of Chicago blues. He was born in the South in Mississippi, but he came up to Chicago. This is where he fulfilled his dream. You know, he wanted to be a full-time blues man. He wanted to record records. He did so much more than that, Bob. Muddy Waters credited with inventing the Chicago blues sound. You know, before Muddy, that blues had the harmonicas, it had the acoustic guitars, but Muddy changed everything with his electric guitar and that big amplified sound. Let's hear a little more of it this morning. We got another one.
Yeah, another reason why those old Chess studios on South Michigan Avenue are so historic.
Isn't it incredible? He came up here pretty much for that. He heard you could cut a record in Chicago, and you could cut it at Chess Records, which is where he did. He got his start at Maxwell Street Market, but eventually his sound was heard all over the world. And you know this, Bob, I mean, better than anybody, about how many people his work inspired, you know, the number of rock stars. The Beatles, Jimi Hendrix, Led Zeppelin, even AC/DC, all influenced by Muddy Waters. And the Rolling Stones influenced so much that they named their band after a Muddy song. Mm-hmm. Rolling Stone. We also have one more clip for you, Bob, here of the Stones performing at the Checkerboard Lounge, Chicago's South Side, back in the day with Muddy Waters.
Yeah, that was back in 1981. Muddy and the Stones. How about that?
Just incredible. Yeah, the Stones came here. They wanted to meet Muddy in person. He had inspired their work, and there they were performing magical moments on stage there on the South Side.
Also, this week in Chicago history marks the 25th anniversary of the death of Mike Royko back in 1997.
Yeah, you might call it 25 years from the day Slats Grobnik lost his alter ego, or the Billy Goat Tavern lost their most famous customer, or you could say Chicago politicians and Cub management lost one of their harshest critics of all time. He was those things, as you know, Bob. Mike Royko wrote 8,000 columns in his career at 3 different newspapers. And I know not all of those columns stand up to the test of time, and they don't stand up to the lens of today. People are often critical of that about Royko now today. But I'd argue a column is meant to capture a moment in time from one person's perspective. And Mike Royko was always on the side of the little guy. You could say that about him. I also know you know this about him, Bob. He rarely, rarely ever gave interviews. He was so old school in that way, and really just preferred to let his columns speak for themselves. But I dug up this interview, a very candid, surprisingly so, Mike Royko, 3 years before his death, explaining how he found material for all those columns.
I did a lot more investigative reporting because there was so much goofy stuff going on. I mean, I'd go to city council meetings and just sit there and describe what actually happened. That was one of the reasons I wanted a column. I found that Chicago politics, as it was being covered, didn't really reflect reality. Reporters then, you know, the beat reporters, they'd clean up the language. They would make really idiotic people sound reasonably normal. And I wanted to write about them the way I thought they were. So until they wised up, I'd go and interview these guys and then just print what they said. Nobody had done that to him before. The mayor, his PR guy, sent word, if Royko keeps coming to the press conferences and quoting him, we're not going to have any more press conferences.
Pretty cool to hear him. He, as you say, rarely gave interviews. I never could get him on one of the shows I was doing until I played in a softball game with him. And then once I participated in 60 in softball, then he said yes to me.
So you got an interview with Royko. I didn't know that. That is amazing. How was it to talk with him? Did he elaborate a lot, or was he kind of closed off about things?
He only wanted to talk about softball.
You know, it's interesting. If you've got a favorite Royko column, the Tribune right now is running this thing where you can post yours, and they're pulling together some of the more memorable Royko columns throughout his several decades, writing for three different papers across town. So you can check that out if you want to today.
This Week in Chicago History, continuing now with Anna DeVlantis. Let's talk about a traffic milestone in Chicago.
Do you ever take Laura Wecker Drive to work, Bob? Do you like it?
I'm down there a lot. Yep. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I take it too. 1957 is when it first opened to traffic for the public. Mayor Daley at the time said this is going to relieve all kinds of congestion in the loop. It's great. It's expensive, but it's going to be great. You can drive under the city and experience who knows what along the way, as we've come to find out, and maybe even get lost down there, pop up on a street you didn't expect to. I don't know that it did ever accomplish the dream of relieving all that much congestion. It feels like cab drivers use it and Hollywood movie producers for their car chase scenes, but it doesn't get all that crowded down there, especially lately, I find it. But mm-hmm. It's there, and mm-hmm. we love it.
I think the same people use it every day, and the others don't know about it. But thank goodness for Laura Wacker, because you need some place to go drag racing, don't you?
Well, gosh, that's what it's become, hasn't it? Wow.
You know, we've got an Al Capone This Week in Chicago History note now, and I was talking to Alderman Brian Hopkins yesterday about our crime problems in the city lately and how the image of Chicago has been tarnished by what's going on downtown and on Michigan Avenue. And if we went back to the days when we were known as the Al Capone City, it would be an improvement in our image compared to what's going on here lately. But this was a historic week for Capone, wasn't it?
Absolutely. 1932, Bob. Al Capone left Chicago this week in 1932 by train and never really returned to the city again. He was accompanied by prison guards, and he rode the Dixie Express to serve his 11-year sentence in a federal penitentiary for income tax evasion, of course. You know, he was arrested and charged and connected to so many more serious crimes, as we know. Those never stuck. The income tax evasion is what he went away for. And I went and looked back at the newspaper archives from then. Capone going away was huge news, drew national reporters to town, lots of attention, massive crowds outside the train station. And a Tribune reporter on the train with Capone was quoted saying, you know, hey, what do you make of all this? And Capone said, with all the fuss, you'd think Mussolini was passing through. He didn't really get, he seemed kind of amazed by all the attention, I guess. But he left Chicago, spent time in prison in Atlanta, then moved to Alcatraz before being released and spending his final few years in Florida as a pretty sick man when he was released, of course. He did return to Chicago one last time. His final resting place is Mount Carmel Cemetery in Hillside, Illinois.
Chicago history and advertising intertwined. Tell us what happened this week in 51.
Yeah, sure. They go hand in hand, no doubt about it. Some of the best advertisements of all time started here, and the jingles that were created have lasted decades. But somewhere in a fabulous Mad Men-style wood-paneled office in 1951, Bob, at Leo Burnett, executives maybe with a martini in hand, at least that's how they portray it in Mad Men, but Tony the Tiger created as the face, the friendly face of Kellogg's Sugar Flakes, a new cereal, later to be known, of course, as Frosted Flakes. Here's one of the original TV ads. This is just great, from the 50s. Tony the Tiger, along with his son, Tony Jr.
Kellogg's Sugar Frosted Flakes. They're big, frosted flakes of corn that say the best to you each morning from Kellogg's.
Hey, Bob, maybe this'll work.
I gotta say is, try some Kellogg's Sugar Frosted Flakes. They're great!
The other mascots they came up with at Leo Burnett didn't quite take off, did they?
You know, isn't it interesting, Bob, when you go back and you look at the brainstorming sessions and what came out of them, there was, back then, they came up with four mascots. Tony the Tiger was one of them, and others were part of it. Elmo the Elephant, Katie the Kangaroo, and Newt the New. Needless to say, none of those really panned out or took off like Tony did. But Frosted Flakes still the third most popular cereal in the United States today. It's pretty cool.
And those creative directors who came up with those other mascots didn't hang around for a long time, probably. And finally, we remember what happened that affected gas stations this week in 1977. Wasn't that long ago, was it?
Do you remember this, Bob? Because this is before my time, when you couldn't pump your own gas in the city of Chicago.
Oh, yeah.
You had to have the professionals at the gas stations handle it. The gas station attendant would come out, and I guess they'd squeegee your window and check your oil, but you couldn't do it yourself. City Council changed that this week, 1977. You no longer had to use full service, and you no longer had to pay for it either. There was part of the ordinance that said you had to pay at least 10% less if you were pumping it yourself. I think it's fascinating, though. They thought it was unsafe, even dangerous, right?
Right. Exactly. And I remember that. I don't remember the days, my dad would tell me, about uniformed attendants with cap and tie giving you S&H green stamps at the gas pump.
It's so incredible just to think. And we've done pretty well with this one. We got this privilege of pumping our own gas. You don't hear of many accidents, which is
no.
Thankfully so.
This week in Chicago history. Thank you, Anna. Talk to you next Wednesday.
Thank you, Bob.